Hello everyone, this is Ariane and you are on the call for day two of the Smartest Tell Summit 2008 and our panel discussion on selling your art. Panel members, Allison, are you here?
I am.
Hi, Allison.
Hi.
Joan Stewart.
I am here.
Oh, yay, Joan, thank you. Jeffrey Gorman.
I am here.
All right.
And Michael's here as well.
Michael, which Michael?
Michael Bungay Senior.
Hi, Michael. And Molly? Molly Gordon? Well, let's see. We're missing Molly and Michael Woodward at this point.
Michael is here, Ariane.
Oh, you're there. Hi. Glad to have you here. All right.
Okay.
So I guess that just leaves Molly. We're going to wait for a minute for her. If you have just joined us, you're on the call for panel day two of the Smartest Tele Summit 2008. And we are going to be working with selling your art today. Yesterday we did balancing your life. For complete information on this 7-day professional art career conference and any future projects we launch, go to www.smartest-telesummit.com. That's smartest-telesummit.com. I'm Ariane Goodwin, the creator of Smartest Telesummit, moderator and host for the entire 7 days. Molly, have you joined us yet?
Yes, I have. Hi, Ariane.
Hello. Hi. I'm glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
Okay, we're all here. Listen, before I move into introducing today's panel, I'd like to make a couple of comments. First, I want you to know that this conference has been deliberately designed to work with both inner and outer realities of your art career. And I know that for some of you, when we start talking about feelings or attitude or what's going on that wooshy-wooshy inner landscape, you just roll your eyes and wish, for heaven's sakes, can't they get to the point? I want to know what to do. Give me some meat on the bone. And I want you to know you're right. The bone needs meat. But the tricky part is you can't get the meat unless there's bone behind it. You can take them apart, your outer and inner realities, but they come together first. And yes, this is my prejudice completely. I'm responsible for believing that when you do not pay attention to the bones of your life, the meat eventually falls off. But make no mistake, I value both in equal measure. The outer realities of your life, the weather, traffic conditions, how your back feels or your knees, these are paramount. They are the living realities of your life. And how you approach these, that's the inner part. In large part determines your success. There's just no way around this. And I encourage those of you in this conference who want action steps and don't feel that you are getting them, please just ask us. Ask me. Ask one of the smartest experts. If you have just joined us, yes, you are on the call for panel day two of the Smartest Tele Summit 2008, and I'm going to be introducing our guests in just a minute. Yesterday, our panel of experts talked about different aspects of how to approach balancing the range of activities that make up your life. One of our panel guests went so far as to question the whole concept of balance itself. This woke me up in two ways. First, I realized how valuable it is to question things, and I wanted to remind you and encourage you, all of you artists, as you listen to the range of ideas these 7 days are going to be bringing you, go ahead and question. Be a heretic. It's one of the attributes of the arts in the first place. The arts have always given permission to the artist to question everything, which in turn gives the rest of us a model and permission to do the same thing. My hunch is that questioning is what leads us to an orchard full of ripe fruit. But when you question, I suggest paying attention and watching where the questions are coming from. Oh, yes, that inner place again. So look, are you sincerely curious? Do you have a different take on what is being said? Or do you have something of the trickster in you, and it just feels good to push back and watch the reaction? See if you have a judgment about yourself when you question. Is it all right for you to ask questions? Do you give yourself permission to rub against the grain and push back? I have a sneaking suspicion that asking questions and finding your artist's voice are deeply connected. But that's a discussion for another time. The second way Mark's question woke me up was to think about the idea of trying to balance everything in my life in the first place. And to be honest, when I looked at that, it just feels unreasonable, if not almost impossible. When it's fall, I stack wood. When it's winter, I shovel snow. When it's summer, I plant tomatoes. So what if I took the model of seasons instead of the model of balance? What if I took the next 3 months and focused on landing just one gallery of my dreams? The rest of my life will be there, like the garden sleeping under the snow. It means I can't do it all. It means I have to make choices. It means I have to let things go. It also means allowing different parts of my life to be more full than the others. So the scale really does tip in one direction, my art. And it means I give myself permission for that to be okay. If you have just joined us, you are on the call for panel day two of the Smartest Telesummit 2008. Before I introduce today's panel, a couple of housekeeping notes. I want to clarify a point about recording the sessions over these next 5-6 days. I apologize for the confusion yesterday. You were going to a web page that was telling you the recording would be up immediately, and the recording wasn't there. Egg on our face for sure. And it also tells you something important about your own websites. It's not just the images that are important, it's also the words. And I want you to know it takes a little time for us to get the recording and upload it to the calendar events page, but our plan is to have it up within 6 hours after the end of each session. That said, sometimes technical problems just land in our laps. For instance, last night, the recording person sent us the wrong file. Sometimes we catch this before we pass it on to you, and sometimes we don't. And you let us know, and we are eternally grateful. Let me be perfectly clear. You are not bothering us when you let us know something is not working for you. The only way we can fix it is if you let us know it's broken in the first place. So please go right ahead and complain. You will only have our gratitude. All right, let's move into today. I want to introduce the experts. They're going to be discussing the topic for this panel on getting selling your art. Almost the entire panel today are returning to Smartest for their second year. And if you've joined us, you are on the panel call for Day 2, Smartest Telesummit 2008. Molly Gordon, hello. How are you in sunny Seattle? I couldn't really resist that, though.
Yes.
The SS there.
I'm great.
Molly is an internationally recognized master certified coach, and she is known for her work helping accidental entrepreneurs, which I think pretty much describes every artist I've ever met. She helps us bridge the gap between doing the work we love and earning a living. Her clients range from artists to professionals to nonprofit and governmental organizations. She is also the creator of Authentic Promotion, Grow Your Business, Feed Your Soul. And she is the proud parent of a new book. Molly, would you give us the title?
The Way of the Accidental Entrepreneur, How to Grow a Business That Fits Just Right. And they were delivered last night.
Oh, great. That's so great. Tens of thousands of people subscribe to Molly's free e-zine or visit her websites to be challenged and supported to show up, serve, and prosper. Joan, hello. How are you?
I'm cold.
Oh, no, you're cold, too.
I'm here in my office with my Green Bay Packers sweatshirt on. Shivering, but I'm all set to go.
I hope you have something hot next to you to put your hands around.
I hope so.
A hot mug of coffee or tea.
Yep.
Listen, if you don't have a penny to spend on advertising, but you want the world to know about your artwork, your art business, or some area of art that you are an expert in, Joan is the woman to know. As a publicity expert, a media relations consultant and professional speaker, Joan shows people how to use the media to establish credibility, enhance reputation, and position yourself as an expert. You can sell more of your art and more of your expertise and promote a favorite cause or issue. Her popular internet newspaper, The Publicity Hound's Tips of the Week, goes out to more than 20,000 subscribers worldwide. I encourage you to jump on her publicityhound.com website and sign up. Michael Bungie Stanier up there in northern Canada. Are you cold too?
Yeah, I'm even colder than Jonas. There we go. A little inter-panel competition.
All right.
Who is the coldest panel member today? Michael is the founder and principal of Box of Crayons, a company that works with organizations and teams around the world to help them do less good work and more great work. Michael was 2006 Canadian Coach of the Year. He is a Rhodes Scholar from Oxford University, holds a Master's in Philosophy from Oxford and Law and Art degrees with highest honors from the Australian National University. He created Get Unstuck and Get Going on the Stuff That Matters, the 8 Irresistible Principles of Fun, and his biweekly newsletter, Outside the Lines, is read by over 40,000 people. He speaks at numerous events spanning 3 continents. Hey, listen, if you've just joined us, yes, you are on the call for panel day 2 of the Smartest Telesummit 2008, and I'm smack in the middle of introducing our guests. Next is Allison Stanfield. And Allison, I'm going to guess one thing. Are you cold?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Why? You take care of yourself in the middle of winter?
I'm inside. But like Joan, I'm rooting for the Packers on Sunday.
All right.
I'm a major Packers fan.
Oh, anyway. My goodness. All right. Allison started college as a painting major and ended up with undergraduate and graduate degrees in art history after spending 10 years working in art museums where nobody talks about art as commerce. She moved into her current career as an art marketing consultant. She's always been an artist advocate and feels that ignoring the business side of the art world really messes up artists' opportunity. Allison runs ArtBizCoach.com, where she teaches artists how to be more savvy through her Art Marketing Action newsletter, online classes, and individual consultations, all available through her website. Glad to have you with us, Allison.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here again.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi there.
You are in the sunny Southwest.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like a little bit of a turncoat after listening to all your other guests here.
Well, you can just sort of breathe into the line all that warmth, and maybe it'll help us out.
Okay.
After studying at the Maryland Institute of Art and the Boston Museum School, Jeffrey moved to New Mexico and worked for 10 years in the gallery world. He was director of the Horwich Llewellyn Gallery and executive director for the estate of Alan Hauser. Am I saying that right, Hauser?
Hauser,
a renowned Native American sculptor. He founded GG Plus A, a consulting and career development firm working with artists, museums, and art organizations in the U.S. and Europe. He's written articles on the business of art for Art Calendar, The Artist Magazine, and The Pastel Journal. He has given numerous workshops and seminars for a variety of arts organizations, including the Santa Fe Museum of Fine Arts, the Albuquerque Arts Alliance, and many more. Now, I understand, Jeffrey, you have scaled way back on your art consulting, right?
I have, and now I am a full-time artist.
That is just incredible. And artists, take note, this man is seriously in the trenches with you, so he is going to be a key ally for you in this conference. So it makes us double honored that you're willing to come back and be smartest for time, too. Jeffrey, thank you so much.
Well, thanks. This is a lot of fun.
Michael Woodward, hello.
Hello.
This is another person who's living in the sun in Florida, correct?
We'd all be pleased to know it's cloudy in Florida today, but it's 70 degrees.
Uh-oh.
I'd normally say it's really sunny and warm, but it's cloudy and it's been raining a little, but it's still nice and warm. So.
Okay, good. Michael's art licensing company was one of the first in Europe and licensed over $600 million in retail sales over 22 years. It represented artists, illustrators, and photographers who worked with national and international manufacturers and publishers. Michael's also an artist advocate, and he's organized and run major art exhibitions, including one at the Allerton Gothic Castle in the UK, which was featured on BBC TV, and another that caught Elton John's attention, who then commissioned the artist. Michael's book, Licensing Art 101, is regarded as the handbook on art licensing for artists entering this lucrative industry, and I highly recommend it for those of you who are just thinking about stepping into this field. He has a vast experience in different aspects of licensing, all the way from character merchandise and animation to fine art publishing in limited gallery editions, and mass marketing via the high street retailers. If you have just joined us, you are on the call for panel day two of the Smartest Telesummit 2008. And we're getting ready to toss out some of your questions. You know, just like yesterday, I took these questions straight from the vision questionnaires you filled out when you jumped into the inside resource pages. So this is how it works again. The panel discussion will be in three segments. Question of the day for the whole panel. And actually today, we've varied it a little bit. We actually have two questions of the day for the panel, and I'm hoping that that works for all of them. The two-minute challenge, where individual questions come to each panel member, and then the hot seat, one artist's story and the panel's response to it. So the first question of the day, panel members, is this one. If you were an artist struggling with limited time, resources, and energy for self-promotion and promoting your artwork, what two concrete actions would you recommend that would make the biggest difference in getting this artist the exposure they want and need? Molly, would you take the ball first?
You bet. Thank you, and hi, everybody. Concrete actions. I would take a piece of your art. First of all, I'd make an appointment with three people who make art available to the public. This is going to vary depending on your medium. A gallery owner, it could be a store owner if you do fine craft. It could be a licensed art representative. But make physical appointments with three people who handle work like yours. And the purpose of the appointment is not to get them to handle your work. The purpose of the appointment is to pick their brain, to ask for their feedback for 10 minutes. Make a 10-minute appointment with three people. Make it clear that you're going to show them examples of your work and listen to them for 10 minutes, and then you're going to get out of there. This will tell you who your audience is and where your work belongs. And it's very important that you just listen and take notes and not respond. Then the second concrete act I would take is based on who your audience is, which you'll learn from this first act, write an artist statement. The artist statement is like a handle on the door. You can put a nice doorway and a path to your door for your audience, but if they can't find the handle, if your art isn't accessible to them, if they're not invited in, they can't complete the transaction. They can't get up to it. So I would do those two things. Find out who your audience is by asking the people who will know and listen to them, and write an artist statement to that audience.
Oh, thank you, Molly. Of course, you know that's an answer dear to my heart.
Yes, because who wrote the best book in the world on artist statements?
So that's really cool. And I love the metaphor of the handle on the door.
Yeah.
That really works. Thank you so much. Michael,
welcome.
Woodward, what do you have for this artist?
Okay, well, my answer to this is from a licensing perspective only.
Of course.
The first thing to do is this is assuming limited resources and time and energy, then a website is absolutely essential. These days, you can get a website for about as little as $150, $200, so it's not an expensive thing these days. And the website should be very clean, it should be very simple, should be easy to navigate, and it should show a good selection of work. So that's then a window into your world. You've got a portfolio there that you don't have to send it everywhere. Now, the trick then, which is the second thing, is how to get people to come onto the website. I get a lot of little tiny postcards, and I don't think they work really well because it's one little tiny image, and it doesn't really allow you to show enough of the work. So I would get a large postcard mailer, and they're very cheap these days. You can go online to people like PS Print in California and get two or three or even four of your best images with your website details, your telephone, and your email address. Now, this sounds silly, but some people don't put email addresses on. Now, nobody has the time these days to write letters. So basically having your email address, your telephone, and your details on there, and have a link on your contact page when they come onto your website that you can click and basically send a quick email. These days, you've got to make it easy for art directors to contact you, so having an email is essential. I've had lots of letters from people who are artists who don't have an email address. And quite often, I mean, you know, I think art directors and myself, quite often they end up in the trash bin simply because you haven't got time to deal with these people. If they're not on email and they haven't got their digital side of their business going, they're living in the past. They've got to have email. They've got to have a website to basically allow people to access their work very quickly. And those, I think, are the two most essential things that are simple things to do if your resources are limited.
Great, Michael. Thank you so much. Allison, what do you have for us today?
Well, my answer presumes or assumes that I am speaking with an artist at the beginnings of their careers or one that's just starting over. So I suggest artists who struggle with limited time, resources, and energy, which you all can correct me if I'm wrong, is about every artist I know and every person I know, focused on, and I'm going to echo Molly, and the first thing is the artist statement, and the second one is building a community of support. The artist statement is key because it's the backbone of any promotional effort. Until you've defined your work for yourself, as Molly alluded to, you can't expect for anyone else to understand it as you intended. And once you have that language, you can use it on your website, in brochures, in grant applications, in press releases, and so much more. But you have to find that language first. And when you find it, you have control of your destiny. And control is a big thing with me. I'm all for giving more control to artists. But besides control, spending the time writing your artist statement forces you to become more intimate with your art. And I think this intimacy can't help but lead to more confidence. And you all know that confidence is an essential ingredient when you're taking your personal art out into the world. So that's the artist statement. And then the community of support is critical because it gives you even more confidence. Getting exposure means not just getting your art out, but getting yourself out. And that's a lot easier to do when you're not alone. The support of friends and family and of other artists also leads to the sharing and nurturing of ideas, the sharing of connections, and the sharing of financial resources. So those are my two things, the artist statement and building a community of support, and it's all about confidence and control.
Thank you, Allison, so much. Michael Bungie Stanier, tell us what you have for these artists.
Okay, so I'm coming at this from the stand of not being part of the art world, either as an artist or an expert in licensing. You know, I bought a little bit of art in my time, and I go to the occasional exhibition. And here's what I would say about artist statements that I've experienced. Most of them come across, in my humble opinion, and this is a bit controversial, I suspect, as pretentious bollocks. They are confusing and abstract, and here's the critical thing for me. They all sound the same. So here's the concrete step that I would be taking. Write your artist statement, absolutely, because I can certainly see the point of getting clear on your philosophy and your approach to art, both for yourself and for the people you're pitching to. But then ask yourself, how am I going to be different? Because I imagine that if you are an art director and you receive various artist statements, after a while, they all sort of blur into one because they arrive on a similar format, probably a piece of paper. They probably have a similar style. They probably have a similar feel. They probably have a similar tone. And part of what the stand I'm taking here is the question, how do I stand out from all the other artists that are trying to do what I do? How am I going to be different? And part of it is going to be through your art. But part of it is also how you pitch yourself and your art.
Great. Thank you very much. Joan Stewart, your turn, darling. What would you do?
Okay. Last year at this time, when I was on this panel, I made a suggestion that happened to be a very good idea, and little did I know that there was already an artist that was doing it and was seeing great success. And the suggestion is create videos of your artwork in progress and post them to YouTube. There's an artist who goes by the name of Valentina. She's from San Mateo, California. At the time, she was doing just that, and she was pulling thousands of viewers. Back in November 2006, she almost gave up her dream of becoming a painter. And she claims she can't write very well, and she didn't want to have to write the typical artist statement that we've been talking about. So she thought to herself, why not just let myself ramble on a bit on camera as I paint? Wouldn't that make a wonderful artist statement? So she started something called Val's Art Diary. It's a video blog that documents the process of how she paints her paintings. And it includes her rants, her reflections, little funny moments that she captures with her camera, and the subject of her episodes always relates to the subject of her paintings that she's working on. She posts a new video every Sunday night, and you can see the most recent one over at www.youtube.com/ Vals, V-A-L-S, Art, A-R-T, Diary, D-I-A-R-Y, and judge for yourself. Thousands of fans tune in every Sunday, and she sells every new painting she produces, she sells from YouTube. Now, here's the kicker. YouTube had announced that it's starting to share revenues with the most popular content creators, and Valentina is just one of the few lucky ones. Her videos have been watched by over 3 million people over a five-month period, and what surprises her is about all the support and appreciation for art that she found among the viewers who posts comments about her video. And so think of YouTube as a place to post videos. YouTube is hot, 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 and the search engines also love pulling people over to YouTube simply because people love videos.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Do you have a second one, or is that
The second one is to identify where your target audience hangs out, both online and offline, and wherever they hang out, you should be there. And also tied into that second tip is you need to be participating in a lot of the social media sites that are out there right now, such as Facebook, MySpace, YouTube, which I just mentioned, Squidoo. There are hundreds of other social media sites, and we don't have enough time to go into all those, but start investigating the social media world out there. There are hundreds, maybe even thousands of sites where people are hanging out. A lot of these people, they don't subscribe to newspapers. They don't read magazines. They get what they want online. So you should be there too.
Okay. Thank you very much, Joan. Jeffrey, can you give us from your artist perspective, what would you do?
You know, starving artist is the worst position to come from, so we certainly don't want that. One thing in coaching artists that I've found is, to kind of back this up, is setting goals and designing a master plan of where you want to go from point A to point B. So what I found with all limited time, resources, and energy, when you have a roadmap or you have goals set out that you have to achieve, I believe that once you've identified them and you've really plotted your marketing strategy out, you can use your time and all your resources a lot more effectively. Mm. I think the other thing about goal setting that's so terrific is that it takes that psychological weight off of often when we don't know what we're doing, we have so many insecurities and we can make mistakes, things like that. Setting goals, the realistic goals, 6-month goals, is I believe, really, really important to kind of fall in line for everything else you do. Now, the second tool I would recommend, and we've heard variations of it from just about everybody today, is a really, really dynamic portfolio. We know that we have to stand out from everybody else. We know that our art often has to speak for us, that we're not going to be there to kind of sell the art ultimately. And the portfolio says so much, and we already talked about some statements in it, the artist statement, resume, bio, the 8 to 12 images in the portfolio. Obviously, those images just have to be really, really more than 100% just great art. So your portfolio, it can be virtual, as Michael talked about. It can be a website. In my research in galleries around the United States, I'm finding 50-50. Half of them want a traditional portfolio. Half of them are now working with digital images, a website, or just you sending them digital images. The other thing I would say, a third, if I got a third, would be also to buy a digital camera and start photographing and learning how to send your images over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
great.
What I would say.
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, I think that was a handful of nitty-gritty external actions for people who were pining for that today. Thank you so much. That was great. Okay, we're going to move right in to the two-minute challenge, but first I just want you to know that you are on the call for the Smartest Telesummit 2007 Day 2 and our panel discussion on selling your art. The two-minute challenge is each one of you is going to get a question, and I'm going to give you 2 minutes to answer it. We've got a bit of a time thing here so that we can get through to the end of the day, so pay attention as best you can, and I'll let you know if you're getting too far afield. Allison, the first one goes for you. This is what the artist wrote us. As a graphic designer, my business contributes to our cash flow. Putting that aside to make art has been a real challenge. What are some strategies for managing cash flow to figure out when and where to spend money on my art?
Well, this is a great question, and it's one that so many people struggle with. I've had lots of graphic designer clients trying to do the same thing. So the first thing that I would encourage you to do is to take a long, hard look at all of your clients for your graphic design business. Make sure they're the clients you want to continue to work with and who aren't zapping more of your creativity than is absolutely necessary, because you have two creative jobs going here now. So get rid of the clients that are weighing you down. The next thing is more concrete. One of the best things that you can do to manage cash flow is to get some accountability for yourself. And I speak from experience here, because I used to be afraid to look at my finances, to really look at the workings of money. And I made excuses that I love numbers, but I didn't like working with anything with a dollar sign in front of it, that just confused everything. But that was just an excuse. And what I was really doing was avoiding the inevitable. So a year ago, I made a commitment to focus on finances and became involved with a financial support group. And what it's done is to help me get crystal clear on my financial situation. And I suggest all artists do the same, because I know a lot of artists are also avoiding their finances. And that is to track your income, your debt, and your spending habits. I do it weekly. This will allow you to figure out how much you can set aside for your art, an amount that you can gradually increase as you're able to decrease your commitment to your design image, to your design business, and share these goals with others that can hold you accountable. And it has to be a sharing situation. Let me just say really quickly that by doing this last year, in 1 year, I cut my debt in half and I increased my income 48%.
Wow.
That's
Allison,
huge.
I'd like to follow up with a question of my own on this.
Yes.
How do you find a financial support group?
This one kind of found me, and I want to make it clear that it's not an investing group, but I would say I would look for other people who have their own businesses, and it doesn't have to be just artists. It can be coaches, it can be hairstylists, it can be people in insurance, but other people who are in the same situation, maybe even people you know that are transitioning and in your same situation.
Okay.
They're all around you.
Okay. Now, Michael Bungie Stanier, here's one for you. This artist wrote, I have defined a niche, but I don't know how to tap it. I'm reluctant to name this niche for fear of giving someone else the idea who might move faster than I can. But I have no idea where to begin marketing my idea or how to find people with marketing brainstorming skills and abilities.
Well, there's about 12 questions here, so in 2 minutes I'll try and do my very best to
I'll give you a little leeway.
So there's no point in having a niche if you're not going to tell anybody about it. It's sort of a contradiction. So it's worth just spending a heartbeat on why you bother having a niche. And the reason you define a niche is to help your marketing. It is a lot easier to create marketing materials that will appeal to people if you have a specific type of person you're appealing to. The broader the audience you have, the more general your marketing material has to be, and therefore the less it's likely to hook somebody with a special, aha, you really know me, you've really created something that matters to me. Now, a niche is not a lifetime sentence, and part of people's resistance to jump into niching is like, but what if I make the wrong decision? Am I committed to trying to, you know, create art for, you know, blind one-legged Australians for the rest of my life? And the answer is no. You're allowed to change your niche. You're allowed to be flexible. You're allowed to sell product to people who aren't in your niche. It's just there to help you with your marketing. So and there's no point in naming your niche. If you don't name your niche, it means you're not marketing, and therefore it defeats the whole purpose of a niche.
Great.
So I hope that's blunt enough. I
mean, that's really perfect. Right. Where would this person find other people who could help with marketing, brainstorming skills and abilities?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. You've sort of got two options. One is you learn it yourself. And there are a number of people out in this world that can help you think about, and you know, there's a good chunk of them involved in Smartest, either in the panel yesterday or the panel today, who are experts at helping you market and brainstorm and get good. So you are you can learn the skills from people, take courses and practice it. That is fulfilling and takes time. Alternatively, there's a way of actually finding people to outsource that work too. In other words, you might say, look, I just can't do it or I don't want to do it, but then you need to find somebody and set up a financial agreement so they may do that work for you for mutual reward. That's a tougher thing to do because you may not have the money. It's more of a gamble or a risk on their part and on your part. So, you know, in terms of finding somebody to help you with the marketing, look around you. I know at least half the people in the Smartest panel have a bunch of expertise. Molly Gordon, her accidental entrepreneurial book is excellent, and that's going to help start you off on that. Mark Silverstuff, another one of the panelists, is also excellent at this sort of stuff.
Great. Thank you. That's perfect, Mark. That's what I was hoping you'd say. Okay, Molly, for you. Money or the lack of it, this artist wrote to us, holds me back. It seems self-indulgent to pursue art forms which may never make money instead of looking for another business which has more money potential.
Great. So first of all, self-indulgent and making money don't really have anything to do with each other. Self-indulgence or even self-care for me might look like taking a bath with great bath salts, and I don't expect anyone to pay me for doing that. When I had Molly Coddles, my art business, the reason I believe now from 10 years perspective that it did not succeed financially is that I was not in business to serve anyone but myself. Nowhere is it written that people should pay me for doing what I want to do for myself. Business and income earning is an exchange of value for value. And if you value an art form that the marketplace does not value, then by all means, do that art form. Is that self-indulgence? I don't know. Maybe it's essential to you. A diabetic needs to take insulin, but they don't expect to get paid for taking insulin. And please, I don't mean to be demeaning or dismissive, but it is essential to understand that when you're selling something, you're talking about the value the work you do has for someone else. So maybe you find a job doing something you're good at that you can do well and easily that pays you, and you do that 30 or 40 hours a week, and you paint your heart out or do whatever your medium is as, forgive me, a hobby. I think it's time that we reclaim the word hobby and keep it. It doesn't just mean some silly little task. If you're going to sell something, it has to have value for others. When it comes to making a living, your responsibility is to feed and clothe yourself and your family. So find a good way to do that. And you'll hear many other ideas about how to bring those together, but I heard this question as an either or.
Yes, excellent. I did too. And I just want to piggyback off of that about something that has struck me in the vision questionnaires is where people are defining success for themselves as they are feeling their art will be validated when somebody whips out a checkbook. And I feel that it's looking at it in the same bracket you just brought up, that they're creating an artificial either-or situation, that validation of artwork and whipping out a checkbook have nothing to do with each other. So I just wanted
Amen.
To drop that one in. I thought there was a real good connection for that. Michael Woodward, here's a question for you. This artist said, I have work that I think would be good to license, but where do I start? How do I know if my work is good for this or not?
Now, this is a really, really key question that pops up every time I talk to artists getting into licensing. And it's one which actually eludes many artists because quite often their work is so out of touch with what's selling out there in the retail stores, they don't actually see that. So the first thing is to research the products you're actually designing for, because licensing is all about creating art that people put onto products, whether it be fine art posters or greetings cards or stationery or calendars. It's basically looking at those products to see what people are buying. So it's not just a simple question of creating work and then trying to license it, which is what most artists do, and that's a big mistake. So what I suggest is you go out and look at products in retail stores, or if it's fine art, go into hotels and offices and see what you know they're buying. Look at the styles, the colors, the subjects, so you're aware of what these people are actually buying. And I often tell artists who use my consultancy service, imagine that you're being commissioned by the client of your dreams, you know, the client you really want to work for. Research them really thoroughly, and then create a series of work which fits the criteria, in other words, the kind of work that they're buying. And then build a list of potential clients before you start producing. So you know who you're working for, and you can look at the looks that these people have. What happens is many of these publishers and manufacturers create a kind of a corporate identity in the styles of work they actually buy. So don't try and imagine that you can change the styles they buy. You know, you can get a sense of a publisher's style by visiting their website, look at what styles they work with, and then basically start to produce work that fits in with the criteria that they're looking for. So basically, it's a question of researching, first of all, and then producing work which fits. And then basically you'll have a much better chance of licensing the work.
Michael, I have a little question off of this, and it may be way too big a question for this period of time, but if you have a short answer, that would be really great. How does fine art publishing in limited gallery editions fit into this, being able to figure out if your work is applicable to that aspect of licensing?
It's slightly different. I mean, it is a big subject because, again, there are various areas within the fine art business. But let's say, for example, you've got fine art posters and you've got fine art limited editions. Now, the limited edition market really can be direct to collectors or it can be with a publisher. So if you're looking for a publisher in the limited edition market, study all the you can go to Art Expo or you can go online and you can start to learn who are the players. You know, if you don't have to attend the show, you can go on to, say, Art Expo and in New York and look at the publishers. Visit every website and look at the people who produce limited editions. And then you actually see who these people are, go through their inventory, because they list all their artists on the website, and you can see the kind of work they're looking for. And you can see the kind of subjects which are selling. So you can sort of target and you say, oh, this guy, these people only do wildlife. So obviously they're not going to buy abstract work. So if you've got abstract work, then you've got to find a limited edition publisher that specializes in abstract work. This is the idiotic thing that many artists do. They just send stuff to publishers without actually looking at what these people do. And they waste their time and their energy. So they've got to have a hit list of maybe half a dozen companies that their work fits in. So that, the short answer is that I can go into more detail, but that's the short answer.
That's great, Michael. Thank you. No, that's perfect. That's exactly what I was hoping for. Thanks so much. Joan Stewart, here's one for you. How do I chart out a self-promotion strategy that is right for me and effective, that is fun and not a burden?
I was fine with the question until I got to the second part of the question about it being fun and not being a burden. You can certainly chart out a self-promotion strategy for yourself, something that's right for you and that's effective. But I'm going to be real straight up with you, okay? And let's cut through all the crap. This is the reality. It's not going to be fun. And it's going to be a burden. And it's going to be time-consuming, and it's going to be incredibly frustrating. And you're going to have to develop a real, real thick skin, and you're going to have to get used to hearing the word no. No, we're not interested in covering your story. No, we're not interested in getting you onto our radio show. And so that's the reality. But there are some ways that it can be effective. There are some shortcuts that you can take to get a little bit more quickly to where you need to go. And I want to piggyback off something that I think it was Jeffrey Gorman said earlier. He said you have to have a plan. And you do have to have a plan if you're going to self-promote. I did a teleseminar series back in October on how to create a media plan. It was an 8-hour series, and I'm going to encapsulate the entire series for you in 7 steps. Okay, I'm going to tick them off one by one and what you need to do to self-promote. Okay,
okay,
is that okay?
Artist, get your pens out, artist, because this is what Joan does best. Go.
7 steps. Number 1, what are your goals? You have to know what you're trying to do. Are you trying to sell more artwork? Are you trying to license your work? Do you want to teach classes? Are you a jewelry artist who wants to get your jewelry onto the necks and the wrists and the fingers of the hot celebrities out there in Hollywood? Number 1, identify your goals. Number 2, create a top 25 media hit list. These are traditional media outlets and also social media. This would be places online where you want a presence. And it doesn't even have to be 25. It might only be 10. For those of you who don't have a ton of time, start small and identify 5. Have a media hit list. Number 3, research the traditional media you want to get into, the ones that are on your list, and research the social media sites where you want a presence. Research is real important. This is the step that most people skip. Number 4, come up with story ideas about your business or your artwork, and then start pitching these ideas to the media that are on your list, or start going over to the social media sites where you want a presence and start to get yourself involved in the discussion and in the conversation. Number 5, come up with specific tasks that you want to do each month of the year. From January to December, come up with 1, 2, or 3 tasks that you want to do to self-promote. This is actually putting the plan together. And then next, number 6, work the plan. Even if you've only assigned yourself 1 task in the month of February, do that one thing and cross it off your list. And number 7, follow up. If you're pitching ideas about yourself and your artwork, let's say to local newspapers in your own town, and nobody's biting, you're emailing journalists, but they're not getting back to you, follow up with the phone call. Follow up is really important. So those are my 7 ideas. A way to make it go a little bit smoother for those of you who can afford it, hire a virtual assistant. I didn't really start to skyrocket my business until a couple years ago when I hired a virtual assistant to do all of my grunt work for me. And this really, really opened up a lot of time in my schedule to pursue the things that really bring in the revenue.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Due to its length, this panel discussion has been split into two parts. Please find part two on the next CD.